This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Will North Carolina's college students be able to use their student IDs to vote next year? Most state university student IDs have still not been approved by the State Board of Elections. The state's new ID requirements come as college students nationwide are voting in higher numbers than ever before. About 40% of the nation's 10 million students voted in the 2018 midterms, which is more than double the rate from 2014. In recent years, student voting has been caught up in larger debates over precinct mapping, photo IDs, and residency requirements. Joining us to share more about all of this is Will Hicks. He's an assistant professor of political science at Appalachian State University. Will, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So let's do a quick recap of how we got here. I'm sure a lot of North Carolinians have heard a lot about voting in the state over the past decade. So there was this 2013 Supreme Court case, which basically struck down the heart of the Voting Rights Act that led a bunch of states to change their voting procedures. North Carolina then passed this famous voter ID law that was struck down, the one that said it targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision. Then there was yet another change last year that had to do with the constitutional amendment. So kind of tell us what the latest is from last year and where things stand now.
Yeah, so really the initial legislation you were talking about for the initial voter ID law was actually part of a much bigger piece of legislation that included a whole bunch of different restrictions. It changed early voting, it changed same-day registration, it included a voter ID law, and this really reflected an ongoing kind of what some people in political science call a voting war that's happening among state legislators across the country right now about what are the appropriate rules and procedures for voting and what should people have to produce in order to vote and all of that stuff. So a lot of the North Carolina changes were absolutely and in my opinion appropriately deemed racially problematic because they disproportionately would affect African Americans in particular. The voter ID provision that was a referendum, a constitutional amendment on the 2018 ballot, passed, and it passed with a pretty widespread support. About 55% of North Carolinians supported the measure. And that's what political scientists show generally is if we ask people if they think of photo ID is something that is appropriate for people to produce in order to vote, most people without much thought kind of agree about that. Fewer and fewer Democrats every day do. But that's where we stand on that. Initially, that First Amendment, though, was tied up in some legal complications because the state legislators who referred the referendum to the ballot were elected in what at least one North Carolina judge said were unconstitutional legislative districts. But that ruling has now been changed, and what we now know is that this law is valid and going into future elections, 2019 in March, the primaries, and then into 2020, everybody's going to have to produce a photo ID in order to vote.
So starting next year, you have to produce a photo ID. And as you said, most people say, sure, why not? Like, why would we not require that? Can you tell us about some of the reasons why people may not have a government-approved ID? Who does this impact when we have these kinds of laws?
Yeah, so there's a big debate about exactly who and how is this going to change the electorate, right? And the big concern is there's a lot of evidence that the types of people who lack identification cards are not a random sample of potential voters. We're typically talking about people who are socioeconomically disadvantaged, and so that includes racial and ethnic minorities, African Americans as well as Latinos, and it also includes elderly people who, in some cases, no longer drive. And then there's an additional element of urban citizens, people who live in more urban areas, and their use of driver's licenses and driving may not be as widespread as people who live in more rural areas. So there's definitely tons of evidence that there is this non-random distribution of people who lack identification cards. There's still some debate in the literature about prior elections that nevertheless impose these standards, and the research is considerably mixed as to whether or not voter ID laws have in fact reduced turnout, but that doesn't make anyone feel more confident that they never could, right? So there's still this lurking possibility, because we know of this non-randomness about the accessibility and presence of photo identification, that it definitely could in future elections shape the electorate.
Okay, so I want to get into this question of student ID that we mentioned at the top, mm-hmm. and this gets a little bit complicated. So as of this new voter ID law, there were some student ID cards that were recognized as valid, mm-hmm. but universities and colleges had to kind of get these approved with these very cumbersome requirements. There was this initial application process. A lot of people got rejected. A lot of colleges and universities didn't even apply. Now there's a second round. The deadline is looming. So talk about where we are with college student IDs and what may happen for some students who show up at the polls next year.
Yeah, so now a House bill reformed this process. It passed in late May. And it did two things. It extended the deadline through which some colleges are allowed to apply to have their student IDs count as valid voter ID. And so it's given some schools more time to do that. And it also, in some part of this, which is kind of critical, is it made the requirements for what a student ID, what the student ID has to look like or who's allowed to get it. It made those requirements more lenient. So now more universities, more colleges, that have student photo identification cards are eligible for this process. Now, part of the concern, though, are there any schools, and in some cases we know of a few, like Davidson, that just barely got in under the radar, were some schools unaware of this change, this modification in the law that happened in May? And so that has raised some concerns that there are still a lot of schools that have not had their IDs made valid for voting purposes. And so there definitely could be students who don't have driver's licenses, have student ID cards, and would like to vote and therefore can't because their student IDs have not been approved.
So who benefits when students vote less or students don't show up to the polls?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think, there's no doubt that, again, I said that identification cards are not randomly distributed. Partisanship is not randomly distributed among students, especially today. Increasingly, we are seeing people with bachelor's degrees predominantly identify with the Democratic Party, and that has been an upward trend for about the last 30 years. More and more each year, people with bachelor's degrees are more Democratic-leaning than they used to be. And students in particular now are significantly more likely to be Democrats than they are to be Republicans. That doesn't mean there aren't universities that are predominantly Republican, or there aren't certain areas or types of students that are Republicans. But the vast majority of students today are more likely to identify with the Democratic Party or as independent than they are with the Republican Party. And where this really creates conflict and sentiment and concerns is when you get in university environments where you have a small local town, or you're in a county that has a smaller population. We're talking about quite a few colleges in a situation like this. But a school that is in a small town or a underpopulated county, and the school itself is very large. And so there's this concern or conflict between people who have lived in that community for a long time and people who are just temporary students. You know, they're there for 4 years and they leave. And so some of that concern drives this debate over, what does it mean for students to come into that environment and vote? And we're not just talking about voting in presidential elections, right? We're talking about voting in local elections, local bond issues. In the West, we're talking about on ballot issues, ballot propositions. So it can be pretty critical.
So legislators in support of stricter voter ID rules say it helps with fraud. They're anti-fraud measures. What do we know about intentional student fraud? Are there any documented instances of this? Is this a problem that we really need to tackle?
Yeah, so that's, there's this long-running debate about the concerns about the ballot box and fraud, and then the devices that we use to fix them. we have no evidence to indicate that fraud that voter ID laws would address in any way exists in large enough numbers to have shaped an election. There's no evidence in the history of modern elections that we can find where we would have ineligible voters or, some undocumented group of people who came in and voted in widespread enough numbers without being eligible in a way to shape the election. That's just not the kind of election fraud that it appears really matters. We have more recent examples of fraud that actually does matter with our recent congressional elections in North Carolina.
Right, ballot harvesting in the 9th District.
Yeah, collecting and harvesting absentee ballots, sure. Now, that kind of stuff really matters. So, some of the concern over voter ID laws is, some political scientists kind of smirk that it's a lot to do about nothing, right? Is you're defending having this element, this barrier to vote, and maybe it makes you feel better, but there's really no evidence that that's going to do anything. That doesn't mean that election security isn't critical or important, right? But it's we just might be looking at the wrong part of our ballot boxes.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Will Hixon is an assistant professor of political science at Appalachian State University. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just ahead, we will go inside some of the spookiest places in North Carolina. We're going to be joined by two paranormal investigators. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.